is about over. See ya. Okay, here we are. Welcome back. And hour number two already on this Monday. We move into the week, another week of unimaginable surprises coming up, financially speaking. The whole system is being taken down, as I did suggest quite some time back, that the plug is being pulled, and what you're seeing now is exactly what has been planned. This is a global issue. It's not just here. It's not with Credit Suisse. It's not in the UK. It's around the world. They're taking the whole thing down, and they're taking a lot of people off the playing field, as in billions. No mistake. And we have been on this program saying for a long time, a couple years, that this shot, this injection, should never be referred to as a vaccine without qualification. It is not. It has nothing to do with public health. Never has. It's doing exactly what it was designed to do. And it obviously is doing a hell of a good job. Hello there, young lady. Welcome back. Here we are again.
Hi, Jeff. Nice to be back.
Hi. Is it really? Okay. Good. We have been getting a lot of reports about hospitals full, about hospital waiting times and all the rest of it. And we've been fortunate to have Nurse Anne with us a number of occasions in the past to tell us what it's really like inside of a big hospital now. And Nurse Anne is back with us tonight, and we're going to talk to her in just a couple of minutes about her latest observations about life, if that's what it is, in a major New York hospital. 600 beds, I believe. And she'll know better than anyone. I hope some of you saw the story. I put it up yesterday. It's up right now. Exclusive, 24 hours of hell in top New York City hospital. Patients left lying in hallways, urine-soaked floors, and staff incapable of providing answers for desperate family members as the city's healthcare system is stretched to the breaking point. Well, it's going to break. It's not to the point. It may be to the point in terms of how you want to analyze it, but it's already over. It's going down, and it's going to be that way in many cities, many big cities across the country. It's just the way it's going. 24 hours of hell in one of New York City's top hospitals. Let's bring Nurse Anne on and see what she has to say about life and death in the big city. Anne, welcome back. Hello, Anne.
Hello,
not yet.
How are you, Jeff?
There we go. Good. I'm fine, thanks. Erica's right here with me, and we're glad to have you back on.
Hello, Anne.
It's good to be back.
Now, the story I just alluded to briefly is certainly being repeated all across the country. Not a joke. This is a time when you really don't want to go near a hospital unless you're knocked out unconscious or have broken bones. And even then, I'd be very wary. The hospitals now are not a good place if you want to come out healthy and happy. It's a very big dice roll now for a number of reasons. What's it like as compared to what it was, let's say, 6 months ago, just for fun? What have you seen happen in the last few months in terms of quality of care, quality of doctors, quality of staff, and then quality of outcome? What are you seeing? How does it look?
Well, the hospitals have been short for a long time. They're working short-staffed for many, many months. Now, actually, I go back even a year and a half when they started the rollout of mandates and COVID vaccinations. They lost a lot of nurses back then, and they were never able to recuperate those losses. Plus,
they lost one third of the professional health staff in America. Basically, they walked.
Yeah. They left a lot of them who were close to within a couple of years of retired. They didn't want anything to do with it.
Uh-huh.
And others decided to go back to school to do something completely different or just get out of the medical field. So we never got those nurses back, and the nursing schools can't get the young nurses out fast enough to recover all of those gaps. And yeah, you've lost the experience as well. The experience went with a lot of those nurses. So the problem with that is after a while, you're working short all the time. You're pushed to your limits, right. And your fuse is short. And that's, I've been saying this actually from the beginning. I've been saying when they rolled out the vaccines, they mandated all the nurses to take those vaccines. Even the nicest of the personalities that I used to work with, it changed them. It changed them drastically. And they were very high strung. They're snappy with patients and their own coworkers. And it's not a very nice environment to work in. The doctors, and I know when you asked me about this, the doctors, primarily in the emergency room, they're basically just try to filter through the weight of people that are waiting, and filter. They can never get. They'll never get through them in one night. It's just impossible. Some people are there for 15 hours waiting in the emergency room before they're even seen.
15 hours.
15 hours. They're in the ED.
Wow.
Before they're seen. So you have a choice. You take you stay and you wait and hope you'll be seen. Or you leave and you go somewhere else and hope that somebody else can deal with the issue. The spillover off the ED is basically they're going into the urgent care centers, and the urgent care centers are being overwhelmed as well.
All right, let me go back to what you mentioned about the general attitude and the behavior of some of your coworkers, a lot of your coworkers, that they've changed since having to get the shots. They're different. Now, certainly somebody might come in and say, well, it's stress. They're overloaded, they're overworked, and they're just manifesting this short-tempered nastiness and being curt with people because they're stressed. How would you respond to that if somebody tried to explain away their behavior by saying it's stress? What would you say?
Well, I would say there's a piece of that, maybe. But for the few nurses that got exemptions, that never got the vaccine, their personalities never changed. They're still the same persons.
All right.
And they're still working in the same environment.
Yeah, there's your control group right there. That's interesting. So the people who did not get vaxxed are still essentially the same people. It's those who have taken the shots that Nurse Ann is working with and watching who have changed drastically in many cases. Fair statement?
Yep. That's a fair statement. Yep.
Not good. Not good. All right, how about the replacements that we did mention are coming over here from the Philippines? How are they doing? Now, they're coming over here injected, so we don't know how they were there before. I'm not talking about the personalities necessarily, but how are they doing in terms of walking into a hellish environment like they're walking into? Are they making a contribution? Are they able to help? What's going on?
Well, see, I have found all my life that any one of the people who come from any kind of, say, Asian countries or the Philippines or anything like that, they're usually a very gracious population, and they're just so grateful to have such a good job. And usually what's happening is they're coming over and they're trying to support their own family in their home country. So they actually have a pretty good attitude, but then they just work. Like, they keep to themselves a lot. We had one girl from Philippines. She came over, and she had received the vax, and she had the boosters, and she got sick on the job. She was the one I was telling you about a few weeks back, that she was really fatigued all the time, and then she started having chest pain one night when she showed up on shift, And then ultimately she had to leave the job. She got so sick. So that girl has not come back.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, all right. So there's no shortage of volunteers, apparently, to come over here. Is that what I'm hearing? They are bringing them over here. Replacements.
They're bringing them over, but to be honest, there's not, I'll be honest, in this particular hospital, there's not that many.
I see.
I think one of the things is that the hospitals have decided they don't want to pay the money out anymore because they're not getting COVID money. So the amount of money that was filtered into the hospitals because of all of the things that in the beginning when they were putting them on ventilators and putting them on remdesivir and doing all of that. Well, that's still happening, but not to this, to the level that it once was. And what's happening is that the budgets are getting tightened up. So the administrators are basically saying, can you work with less? So they're making the existing nurses work like crazy, and then they're wondering why they're leaving. Like, they've lost so much staff. It's incredible.
Right, right. All right. Go ahead, Erica, if you have a question, pop in here.
Are you seeing the same, I guess, types of patients, same symptomatology, same complaints? Has anything in that regard changed?
I'm starting to see younger females coming in now through the emergency room. And
younger being what? Less than, under 20s?
20s? 20s and 30s.
Okay. All right.
And they're coming in now with bleeding issues. And they're having huge bleeding issues, and it's going on for a long time, period of time. They sought treatment outpatient. They weren't getting anywhere with their physicians outpatient, so they're ending up in the emergency room because they're completely wiped out because their hemoglobin levels are in the toilet, and they're they have no energy left to do to try and get anything done in their life. They're missing work, and so there's a lot of young women coming in with issues like that.
Reproductive issues. Okay.
We had a woman come in, and she was pregnant, but she lost the baby in the emergency room. She was actively bleeding, but the others were not pregnant, but again, very young women.
I would think that these people, Anne, I would think that these girls, young women coming in there, they must be emotionally just destroyed. They must be sobbing, and in some cases, crying. This woman lost her child in the hospital, in the ER? This is crazy.
Yeah. She was, I believe, when I was talking to the respiratory therapist, because once they page the overhead, the code, when the patient, the baby came out and the baby was dead, they page overhead, and they tried to resuscitate the baby, I think, for nearly 40 minutes, and they couldn't get the baby back. And so, of course, this young girl is just devastated. It was her first child, and I believe her husband was actually away. He was on a business trip so she ended up coming in with her mom. So, of course, this is a huge devastating blow to her. And the baby was, I believe they said the baby was 30 weeks.
That's almost full term.
Yeah. I mean, and they I know they tried really. They tried because a bunch of the emergency team ended up going to the ED, and then we had an emergency on our floor at the same time. So some of the people that were down responding to that emergency were coming up to our unit because we were having a patient who was having active chest pain. So it was. It's nonstop. The emergencies never stop. The codes never stop. There was a time where if you had one code, you'd say, oh, my gosh, somebody's having a really bad night. But now you're having, like, three or four different codes in three or four different locations.
Wow.
And It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
How many people that come in to the hospital do you think at this point? This is a difficult subjective thing to even project, but how many coming in because they've been injected with the biological weapons? How many people, weapon victims? What's the percentage? Yeah. Just take a guess.
Well, I'll be honest. All of the ones that I've seen come through that I every night that I've worked has been vaccinated. So that's I'm going to answer that question by saying I've seen 100% of the people that are vaccinated. That's all I see now. It's so rare to see anyone unvaccinated.
In other words, the profile of the normal hospital patient has been changed irrevocably. It's different now. It's completely different. It's a whole different clientele, so to speak. These people are injected with a bioweapon. They're beginning to manifest all sorts of symptoms. The symptomology must be very diverse, but these are bad, bad things that are happening. And these people are not getting better, as most all of you listening know. They're not. They're just not. We have some listeners right now who have been vaxxed, who are not well, and they're getting worse. They know it. Maybe some are getting better. Maybe some of the symptoms are abating a little bit. But the bottom line is that these shots are designed to do one thing, and they're doing it perfectly. They're destroying life. Whether it happens in a day, a week, a month, or a couple of years, doesn't matter.
Well, I'm hearing patients say, Jeff, that they are saying, I got the first two vaccinations, and I got the booster, and then I got really sick, and I'm not going to get any more boosters. But to be honest, I in my mind, I think to myself, that's great, but I think you've missed the boat because you got the first three anyway. And you're here now, and you're here for all these reasons. You know, you have heart problems now that you didn't have before. So, you know, it's really hard to work on this side of the bed and look at them patients and know that they're there because they did get vaccinated. And now they have, voice regrets about it. But there's a lot then that won't. A lot of them can still see this as a triumphant treatment for COVID when everything was so bad. And even with the investigations on, and they see the news and all that, they still don't want to believe that, that Gates or Fauci or any of them people had any part in, trying to eliminate the human race.
Well, see,
it's incredible.
The denial aspect of this is the most mentally perplexing. These people will not face the truth. They just can't. I understand that. I get it. Denial. It's too uncomfortable. You want me to go somewhere where I can't go. I can't believe that they would do that intentionally. And the controllers knew exactly precisely how that was going to play into their favor before they started this whole damn program. They knew. Denial. That's what's happening. Look at the top of the homepage and at Rents, and you'll see I got a little video up there, just a 60-second video, of a number of people on live camera falling over dead. Did they resuscitate them successfully? Maybe a few. Most of them are dead. They're gone. So what they're doing is they're normalizing death here. Everyone knows someone who's died now from these shots, or two or three or ten. So they're normalizing it. They knew that would happen too. Lock that in and tie it in with denial, normalizing it. Oh, well, that happened. That's too bad. But the denial thing is that's their trump card. They know they've got that.
Well, here's another thing that's becoming very apparent, and this is I'm not usually working with physicians anymore. I'm working with nurse practitioners.
Okay.
So the doctors are disappearing. The people who actually went to school for medicine and studied in Ireland, it's 7 years, but you go, study for medicine to be a fully fledged doctor. That's a dying breed. So they're churning out nurse practitioners. That's what they're doing. And they don't come with the same level of knowledge that the physicians do.
I'm sure you're way ahead of all of them. That must be frustrating.
Mm-hmm. It's incredibly frustrating. Incredibly frustrating. Mm-hmm. And so that's one piece of the puzzle. And then in this hospital where I'm working right now, they had the state comes in periodically to evaluate the hospital to see that they're meeting all the guidelines and following all the procedures and policies, and if they can hit the hospitals up for fines, right? This is how they make their money. So they're going around and they go to all the units in the hospital. They find out how many nurses hold the certifications for basic life support, which every nurse should have. Once you start working, that's a given. But the advanced cardiac life support certification is an additional certification that you would need if you worked in an emergency room or the intensive care unit or in PALS is another one for the peds. If you work with children, but if you work in a high intensity, critical care, like high acuity environment, you have to have that certification. Well, they don't have enough staff nurses that hold both of those certifications. So guess what they started doing to fudge their numbers? They turned around and they started asking the travel nurses what certifications they had so they could actually make their numbers look good to the state.
All right. So let me change. I'm going to change. We've got plenty of time, but I want to change this. We had a lot to cover here. There are stories now coming out of Ireland, for example. 21-year-old Irish cricket player dies within days, as in 3 or 4 days after being diagnosed with testicular cancer. The oncologist believes it may be vax-related. Well, all right, something funny there, but it's very dark humor. Yes, of course. And four other players of sports in Ireland came. What do they call it? See if I can find it.
Gaelic football.
Football players. Yeah,
Gaelic football.
Four more.
Yeah.
Four more testicular cancer. Mm-hmm. Rugby players, skiers, cricket players, as I mentioned. So we've got women with endometrial problems, massive bleeding, which often leads right into cancer. And these are all injected people for the most part. Now in men, it's going after the testicular aspect of overall physiological health. This locks up with Dr. Arnie Burkhardt in Germany, who did autopsies on at least two males, checking to see if their reproductive organs were being impacted by the spike protein. Erica, tell Nurse Anne what Dr. Arnie Burkhardt, the eminent pathologist, found in Germany with two of those people.
Well, yeah, he had two bodies that he was autopsying, and one was a younger male, I want to say 30-ish, who had fathered at least one child, and vaxxed, of course, now, and deceased. And then there was an older male in his 70s. In both cases, Dr. Arnie Burkhardt found extensive infiltration of the spike protein in the testicles and no presence of spermatocytes.
These
cells
100%.
That would be...
You say it was 100%.
There was none... I mean, it was just saturated with spike.
Yeah,
and he put out a warning. He said,
explosions of cancers. Cancers are incredible. It's all over the map. Pancreatic, or lung masses, which turn out to be positive for cancer. And the young girls, the bleeding issues are off the chain.
Well, hold on a second. This, I think we have to spend just a little bit of time, a couple moments, on the idea that this biological weapon was designed to do many things. One of them was to sterilize humankind, okay? The women are being destroyed in terms of their reproductive capabilities. The men are being destroyed in terms of their reproductive capabilities. We don't even know what let's just say there's a spike to sperm ratio in a man's testicles. We don't know what the ratio is. It could start out 5% spike, But in the case of the two autopsied in Germany, it turned out to be 100% spike, zero sperm. Zero. None. So this is a process that is clearly designed to sterilize both males and females of this species. And those sterilization issues often, maybe they all will, given enough time, morph into cancer. The girls are ending up with endometrial cancer, and they're going in and they're doing entire hysterectomies on them. Boom. Well, they're not doing that with men, not yet, in a counterpart sort of fashion. But I think they're beginning to look now for testicular cancers in men. And what they're finding is very discouraging, if not frightening. This oncologist in Ireland conceded that there were four German footballers, soccer players, in the first league, that's their biggest league, who have gotten testicular cancer just since the end of 2022. So that's what they're finding, and they're not screening everybody.
Yeah.
Please go ahead with all the different cancers you're seeing. That was very interesting.
Yeah, there was a physician. He was on the unit because, of course, he had come up with one of the patients from the ED, and he said that he had been looking at an article that was published. It was peer reviewed, and he said that he had a rough estimate that he was being kind. He said that probably nearly 500,000 people died of cancer in these last 4 years associated with COVID-19 vaccination.
Mm.
That's what he said. He was being generous. He was
being conservative. I think he's being conservative. I think he could probably multiply that by 10, 20, or 30 and not be out of the game. This thing is taking people out all over the place. All over the map, different kinds of cancers. Now, Eric and I have reported a lot of cases she's found where pancreatic cancers or growths are being found on people's pancreas. What's the latest on that, Erica? Anything? Are we seeing? The pancreas seems to be a target. Maybe it's an easy target. I don't know.
The more common ones. That's being reported now. In fact, I even saw a Medscape article that said pancreatic cancer was on the increase in young women. I'll see if I can dig that up.
Yeah, but they initially come in and they're diagnosing them with pancreatitis, and then they're working them up and they're finding they have cancer.
Right, right.
So the pancreatitis turns into cancer in many cases right away. I mean, they're just not there yet in their diagnostics. Okay, this is not good. Not good.
Because the inflammation brings them in, because the pancreatitis is so painful. So usually you can get cancer and it comes on it used to come on where you may have it and you'd never know it because you wouldn't necessarily feel the pain of it.
Right.
Unless it was in a very high vascular organ. Now, the pancreas is, but what happens usually is they present to the ED and my unit with pancreatitis and then they get worked up. And with regards to CAT scans and things like that, and their lab work, and lo and behold, you hear that they have a mass. And then the next thing is they're getting, then they have to figure out, is it of a cancerous nature? And 90% of the time, it's a cancerous nature. Gosh.
Well, there you go. I'm wondering if you have any data at all, is the hospital actually administering boosters to people still?
No.
Where are they?
No. I have never given a vaccine at that hospital. I wouldn't anyway. But
I know that. Yeah.
But they ask the patients, are they up on their boosters? There's three questions when they come in. Did you get your vaccine, COVID vaccine? Did you get your booster and did you get your flu vaccine? Those are the three questions. They're asked right off the bat before you ever are seen. We don't normally give it. They'd end up following up with their physicians outpatient for it. And what's happening is patients have got wise to it, so they've decided. Not to follow up, like the people who tell me I'm not getting another one, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish that was the answer.
The other cancers we're seeing is the lymphomas. You know, we're seeing an explosion of the hematological cancers, you know.
Gosh.
I'm not surprised because, you know, the blood goes everywhere. It goes in it, and we can't survive without it going into every single organ in our body. So I'm not surprised that we're seeing this explosion of hematological cancers either. There's a lot of lymphomas. In the last couple of months, there's been a huge explosion of those.
I wonder what the timing is on this. How long after the booster are these people presenting with hematological cancers? 6 months, 5 months, 3 months,
a year? Less than that. We're talking weeks to probably 2 months max.
You're kidding. After a booster present with a cancer? 2 months?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're especially in the younger population. For some reason, you'll see at the younger population, you'll see there's an explosion where they've gotten the vaccine and only a certain number of weeks passed, and they're not feeling very well. They've been sick from the time they got the vaccine. That's usually a red flag right there.
Right.
And
they're
sick from the very fast when they get it, and then they come in and they're getting them, working them up for something completely different. And lo and behold, they find out they have a mass. Mm-hmm. And they have a mass on their ovaries. They have a mass on their uterus. This is the girls. The lymphomas, it's incredible the amount of revealed in the blood work. A couple of lung masses have happened. They thought they were pulmonary embolisms initially. They thought like there was a clot that moved from part of the body. It turns out to be an actual cancer mass. So we're seeing a lot of that. The oncology unit cannot keep up with the amount of patients coming through the emergency room. So what's happening now is they're spilling all of the oncology patients to other units. And that's kind of a difficult thing because you have to have certifications to treat those particular patients. It's for the administration of those medications. So, and it takes nearly a year to have that certification. So we have a situation where the medical system cannot keep up with the demand of levels of critical and high acute cases anymore.
The surgical suites must be going all the time.
Oh, constant. Yeah, yeah. Everybody, there's a lot of people coming in where they'll have falls. You might have, like, I'm at home right now because I actually was very sick there since the last time I worked. So I'm at home here, and the emergency alarms are going off all the time. You can hear them. The ambulances are going by all the time. Usually what is the result of that is if somebody has fallen and they've either broken a bone or they haven't been able to resuscitate them, or they're taking them because they have an arrhythmia. Atrial fib is huge still. It's always there. Atrial fibrillation has never gone away. It's still there. And people who never had heart problems now have that. So it's been an ongoing issue. I mean, I don't know where if you're going into medicine now, you would have your choice on what you want to treat because it's a mixed bag of everything.
Oh, God.
Are doctors or NPs, nurse practitioners, are any of them coming to terms with the basics of this injection, that it is not a vaccine? Do they get it, that it's a weapon to kill people, and it is a mass sterilizer? It's a cancer generator. It's a clot thrower. It's a heart attack machine. I mean, what the heart just stops. We've explained that. Doctor, what's the Japanese doctor's name, Erica, that we played?
Nagase. Daniel Nagase.
He explained it on this program and video, exactly how the spike will surround the heart and I'm keeping this simple, it shuts off the bioelectric signaling for the heart to beat. That's why the heart just stops. And also, tell us about the way it works at the base of the brain. That's critical, too.
Well, that's the autonomic nervous system that, you know, operates 24-7 and controls things like your heart rate and your blood pressure and your ability to regulate your temperature, circadian rhythm. And apparently, the spike has an affinity for migrating to that area. And potentially, if there's enough of it, it can disrupt the function of that organ. And then you won't breathe when you're supposed to breathe, or your heart won't beat when it's supposed to beat.
Yep.
Here's the other side, and I'll stop. There are so many symptoms from this deadly injection, dozens of different symptoms. And I'm just wondering if we're going to get to a point where the first and foremost question is, how many shots have you had? That should be, and then you mentioned it's one of the three, but this thing is killing people in droves. And many different symptoms and many different causes of death can be ascribed to it and put on the death certificate. They never write on the certificate bioweapon death. They don't do that.
No, that's not going to be the cause of death. They're never going to put that there.
No.
But the other thing is the reality is that the people who are working in the medical system now all went along with it. I mean, with a few people who had got exemptions, the rest of them had either left the field, the physicians that couldn't tolerate this, and have left the field, and probably went out on their own and did something different. I have no idea, but they're not in the hospitals. Let me tell you that, because the doctors and the nurse practitioners are still pushing. A lot of them are still pushing these awful weapons on these poor people.
Unbelievable. They're still speaking favorably about these shots. This is hard to believe.
Yeah.
Well, I guess probably because, yes, not only that, but many of them, in order to stay on in their professions, had to take the shots. So there's denial there, too.
And the thing, the other thing that goes hand in hand with all of this is because people have been sick for so long, were healthy at one point. The people who were actually the young ones, who were young, healthy, fit, and were living their life until all this happened, everyone across the board, from the very young to the very old, the amount of antidepressants that are being prescribed to them now is unreal. I mean, that goes hand in hand with the other illness. Apparently now, because they're so sick for so long, they can't deal with life and cope with the situation. So now
understandably,
they're getting depressed.
I understand.
Totally.
I get it.
Yeah.
When you work somebody up, you ask them, what medications are you taking? And it must be, I'll bet you get to the point where you can almost predict it.
Yeah, I'm waiting for them to name how many antidepressants they're on and how many sleeping aids they take at night.
How
many painkillers they're taking. Yeah, and like, you know what? It was bad enough before when we had to deal with people who were getting addicted to those opiates and benzos to begin with. But now it's out of control altogether, and it's almost like it's an acceptable thing now. Expect it.
Wow. Erica, anything you want to put in here? I can't even imagine Nurse Anne, you or anyone else who really cares and who really understands. And I'm not knocking the profession, but there are a lot of people in there who just probably hate their work at this point. All they're seeing is death. They're not seeing people get better. They're going away just as sick as they were before, or they're coming up with a terminal diagnosis of something. I don't know. I don't know how you do it. I really don't. I'm grateful you do, but you have to at some point, you're going to have to make a decision to protect yourself, because we know damn well how horribly diabolically evil shedding is. And we think, Eric and I believe, that shedding is becoming worse and more intense. And not necessarily just because of the booster, although that's bad. Mm-hmm. And certainly people who get the booster are suspected of shedding very heavily for the first several weeks afterward. But the point is, that may be a misdirection thing. These people are shedding nonstop, period. They don't stop. Their body just becomes full of spike, and they're dumping it. Right. And they're also dumping the instructions, the mRNA instructions. You get the mRNA in your body, and you're a spike producer, and you will begin to shed. Now, this is crazy. But that was the plan.
I know, and I mean, I've tried when I feel people out and I ask them, you know, the questions, and I can tell within a couple of seconds if they're pro-vaccine. If they're pro-vaccine, I can't reach them. There's no educating these people if they're pro-vaccine. Mm-hmm. Now, the people who actually have questions and wonder why they're getting so sick, I do try to reach out to them, and I try to make them think, look at what changed. And I remember one night standing in a room with a patient, and I was saying, okay, so you got your first vaccine on this date, and then the symptoms started here. Then you got your second vaccine on this date, and this happened. And then you got your booster on this date, and all of this happened. And he's sitting in the bed, and he's it's almost like he got hit with a bolt of thunder. The correlation between I had his paperwork right in front of me. I could actually see when the vaccines were given and when the symptoms started. And there was complete silence. And I was looking at him, and I was thinking, he just got it. He just figured it out.
Boy.
But that's the thing. Well, if a physician, the physician has the same record, so they're in their doctor's office. Right. The doctor's office, you got your vaccines. They don't go through the dates on each individual date where they got the vaccine, and then when the patient starts getting sick and presenting with individual different types of symptoms. They don't do that. But I sure as hell do, because I actually want them to know, look what you did, and then look what happened.
That's good.
But
when you mentioned, for our listeners who don't know the terminology, you mentioned coding. Coding is usually someone dying.
Somebody's actually stopped breathing, or their heart stopped beating.
So, and you're getting three or four of these a night now.
Easy. Three or four a night. Easy. And a lot of them happen between coming in through the ED and when they leave the emergency room to go to the floor. But a lot of the time they're waiting in the emergency room so long they're actually coding within the emergency room. The system is broken. The problem is the demands are too high on whatever few staff members are left. The nurses are completely drained, and they are trying to, I will say this, there are nurses who are actually trying to do a really good job, but it is becoming a situation where the nurses you're not getting breaks. You're like on a 12-hour shift, which turns out to be a 13-hour shift, and you're running. I mean, I lose weight on this job. It's insane. I do nearly between 10 and 16 1,000 steps a night in on this job. And I never sit, and I rarely get a lunch break.
My God.
Wow.
Yeah, so you're constantly going. It never stops.
You're an extraordinary professional and dedicated, like younger people tend not to even understand. So I'm not knocking them all, but they wouldn't have your absolute devotion to this job and people. How much longer can this go on? Here's another little explanation of a description of this Mount Sinai Hospital on Madison Avenue.
I saw it.
You did? Okay. Every corner was filled
horrific.
Every corner was filled with people the woman who took her mother in said, describing trash littering the floor, urine pots kicked over, homeless people seeking treatment left ignored there. How much longer before these big hospitals are going to begin to just fail? They're not going to make it. They're not going to function. Are we going to see that?
I think they're already failing. If they're honest, they're already failing. I wouldn't go to an inner city hospital. There's not enough money in the world for me to go to an inner city hospital. I wouldn't even go to New York City. There's not a hope. They've been desperate right from the beginning of this whole COVID situation. They've
got it.
There was never, ever enough staff in any of those hospitals, but it's a disaster now. And over 7,000 nurses took to the streets. There's a reason. The nurses took to the streets for a reason. But if those nurses were completely honest, they would actually tell the public what's really, really going on. If they were really, really honest.
Right.
And unfortunately, if you're honest, you lose your job.
All too true. Anne, we have to wrap it up for tonight. Thank you very much for the time. Thank you for being who you are and for caring and for sharing these inside views of something that is, it's like a nightmare. It truly is.
Yeah, we're very grateful to have your perspective. Thank
you. Oh, you're welcome. Yeah.
And take care of yourself.
You guys, I'm off now, and I get to hear all the ambulances, and I don't have to be worrying about being in the emergency room right now.
Gosh.
Yeah, right. it just drives my dog crazy, that's all.
Oh, yeah.
All right. But well, you
thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, dear, and enjoy your chickens.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Have a good night. Bye.
Good night, Anne.
Well, they don't make them like that very often.
No, no. I mean, patients should be very grateful and... the people like that stayed on. I mean, they're a rarity.
And she's paying a price for it, too.
Yeah.
These nurses are getting sick. Like, she's been sick for the better part of a week, and she's obviously getting it in the hospital. Whenever anybody goes into a hospital, can you even begin to imagine the potential of spike protein, of mRNA being spread and shed by the staff? Remember, the staff is 90%+ all shot up, and they're sick. So you've got the dying taking care of the dying, as we've said before. It's just, it's complete science fiction turned into fact. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is. I can't even imagine that kind of work environment right now.
No. No, not a chance. And I think her advice... don't even think about going to a hospital, especially in the inner city, is very good, unless you got a broken leg or something. And even then, I would be tempted to go to a good emergency care or urgent care facility. These big hospitals are just very dangerous places now.
Yeah.
And the survey of what she was able to explain to us fits hand in glove to what all of your research is showing. That's where your research is ending up, at the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, plus the 911 calls that I hear here locally are a mirror image of what she's seeing in the emergency department.
You're still hearing a lot of falls?
Yeah, falls, shortness of breath, chest pain, abdominal pain.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple this past week where... somebody was unconscious, breathing but unconscious.
Yeah. I can only hope that those out there on both sides of the vax highway can make the best of the situations that they have to face. And we're trying to help our vax friends and our unvax friends as well. And we're getting to a point now where we have to start thinking about really isolating as much as possible, both vaxxed and unvaxxed, from one another. You've got to. If you're vaxxed, you have an immune problem. Your immune system is not functioning at all. well in some cases, in most cases. And if you're unvaxxed, you don't want to be around those who are shedding. It's very simple. So we keep doing the best we can. Anyone who says this is a vaccine is a bald-faced liar, an accomplice to mass murder, or utterly ignorant and stupid. We've been saying this for a long time. This is a killer. It is doing precisely what it was designed to do.
I agree. Unfortunately, I'm still seeing quite a bit of cognitive dissonance out there from people who have taken the shot. And, you know, the common theme now is that many of them are sick. They're just constantly sick with something, some kind of flu-like symptom, to the point where they end up in bed for a few days, and then they recover, and they can, you know, get up and go about for a few more days, and then they have a relapse. That's, I'm seeing a lot of that now. And not connecting it to the injections that they've been taking for the past 2 years.
Denial. They have to have heard. They have to have heard the controversy.
I don't think you're watching is CNN or Yahoo News. You're not going to see it.
CNBC. No, you got it. Good point. If you, it's hard for me to imagine doing that, looking at that damn screen and thinking you're being informed. But most people do. They do. It's on the screen. It's got to be okay. No, it's not okay. We don't have a government in this country. That's not our government, Washington. Probably not your government in your state's capital. We have no government. We have no ethos to speak of learning and valuing education. We have no education. The country is heading toward third world catastrophe with an awful lot of dead people to pave the way. People are dying all over the place. I hate to say it, but who else is going to tell you? Many of you out there know it. And I guess all of you should be asking yourselves right now, how many people do I know who have died from what I think is the injection of the bioweapon? And it's no longer, well, I have a cousin who knew somebody. It's now first person, somebody you know or knew. And some people say that they've known up to 10 people who are dead now.
Oh, I heard somebody yesterday said they knew 18 people.
You're kidding.
18.
That's an all-time record. 18.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, maybe we can get that story out, too. That's probably not the all-time record, but that's damned high. People know now firsthand, but still the denial is the biggest impediment to generating any hope for salvation or saving even a few people. No more shots. If you've taken them, no more. And I look, everybody I see who is a host now, or most everyone, of a podcast, I saw another one today. I won't mention her name. She's a host. She has this huge superstore. They're all selling supplements to the desperate. They're making money on this absolute crisis. And I just don't. Whatever I sell, I've been selling for a long, long time. And there's nothing. I could sell a lot of things and push it, but that's not who we are.
Well,
I think
people are coming to the realization that these protocols that they've been buying into for the last couple of years are not effective.
No. They're very pricey, very spendy, and they do very little. And that's the truth.
And,
some people get good results, so more power to those, but that's not the overwhelming majority by any means. All right. You take care. Talk soon.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff.
Okay.
Good night, everyone.
All right. We'll be right back with hour number 3 in just a few minutes. Hold on.